Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Andrew.
It's good.
Nice. Thank you. You didn't seem to mean that as much as I would have liked you to. So.
No, I like all these songs. I haven't looked through all of them yet, but I've looked through most of them.
Oh, they're all good.
I like them all very. Counting Crows, of course, one of my favorites.
Sue is here. Sue at two. Sue Thomas from down the hall. Before we do stupid stuff, we were just talking about the street situation.
Oh, yeah.
But I want you, as a city dweller, to get your time on the soapbox.
Well, it makes me nuts. And I already pay extra amount of $260-some-odd a year in Holly Hills for extra security because the city hasn't hired enough policemen. And so I just got the real estate tax, and I had to pay the extra for it. And I thought, are you kidding me? And then my street doesn't get plowed. It doesn't get salted. Neither does the alley. And that's part of the issue. So they can't pick up trash. They just did that today before I left. But it's almost like, remember Six Flags and they had those old-time cars that ran on the rail?
The rail.
It's like, if you get out there in the ice, you're like that and you
Great
can't
analogy.
Move. And
wow!
Yeah, if somebody took you, you know, if somebody took a turn into their garage and you happen to get on that path, that's where
you're
you'd end
up. You're
going
in their garage.
Oh,
that's a great
man.
Analogy.
So it's really awful. And these are basic things that need to be taken care of. I don't care what party you're in. I want people who can lead and do the very basic things. That's it.
Yeah.
And this is not happening.
You can be from the Socialist Party. If you plow my roads, we can talk.
At least just do the basic things. That's part of what local government is supposed to do. So I am meritocracy. So whoever can do the job, that's who I want.
Yeah, do the job, then tell me what party you're from.
You know, in places like Grafton, when people run for office, like the mayor and such, they don't put their party on the ticket.
Wow.
It's just you vote for who would be good at it. And that might be nice.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I want to remind you guys, we'll post something on Sunday. Wheels, I'll remind you, but would you post something on Sunday about the KSDK thing?
Yeah.
Mike Bush, my buddy, was kind enough to feature me in the Making a Difference segment, which he does Sundays at 10 p.m., and they put a ton of work. Aren't you impressed with how much work they put into this?
Yes.
They were at Bethesda Hours.
Oh, wow.
Tom, yeah. The cameraman, was here for an hour
shooting
B-roll and stuff. So that's going to be Sunday night, 10 p.m., and... yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
That's really nice, Dave.
Yeah, really cool.
How long of a piece is it?
I don't know, but it would. I would think it would have to be a fairly long piece just based on the work they've done.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They interviewed me. They interviewed Linda, who is one of the NOTA volunteers who came from the show. They interviewed my patient, Linda's patient, two sisters who were the daughters of one of my patients. So they've done a lot of work on this.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah. Well, because no one can believe it's true.
Right.
Every single person who hears about it, including me, when they cared for my mom, is like, what are you talking about?
You're like, really?
What the heck?
That was my reaction. Like, yeah. I didn't know that was a
that's
thing.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's coming up. What else? Wheels, what do you got?
I think I might be related to Bill Burr.
Oh, man. Good call.
Really?
Well, no. Spiritually, not genetically.
Oh, okay.
I just want to be clear about that.
He can pass.
In spirit. Because he's a redhead. Now, I have hair. He's got less.
Yes.
But we are the same. We're like ginger, Irish-looking, this guy. No, he said something on Jimmy Kimmel recently. It was earlier this week that I thought it was me talking. And because Jimmy was asking him about how did you handle the fire, because he had to get his family out of L.A. They had to get in their car and evacuate. I think it sounds like the house was fine, but I mean they were told to evacuate. He said, "How are you? Because you're crazy. You're wild, and you have a temper and all that." He said, "You know what? I was totally calm." He said, "When something big and terrible is happening, something big is happening, I go into a calm mode and I get things done and I'm focused." He said, "But if the dumbest little thing goes wrong, I start screaming and swearing and losing it." And that is me. That is me, 100%. And I was curious how the group is, because if I spill my drink at home, I lose it. I throw things. I'm swearing. Susan's like, "Calm down."
Thank you.
But if something terrible's happening, I'm totally chill. I'm calm. We'll figure it out. We'll fix it. We're all good. No problem.
I relate to that.
Are you the same way?
Yeah, I'm very close to that. Yeah.
Because I don't know why. Like, why would that doesn't there is there a purpose for being wired that way? Because there's no purpose in reacting crazily to something
stupid. I saw the same interview,
yeah,
and I loved what he said when his kids ask him, "Why are you like this? What are you really mad at?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "There's an answer to that," because he was talking about if he burns the toast and someone changed the setting on the toaster.
Yes.
And he
the ultimate dad
scream
thing,
balls.
Right.
And he goes, "There are answers to your questions, but let's keep it about toast." Because you don't want to know the real answers to these questions.
I've heard him talk about that stuff where he's like, the toast thing was perfect, because that's kind of like my dad was like that. If something was wrong, somebody else must have screwed it up, and it would start not a crazy yelling, but like, "Oh my God, who changed this?" or whatever. I'm not as much about that. It's more about when I screw up, I really get mad. Like when I do something, when I spill something and I make a mess that I now have to, I get really mad about
Maybe
that.
Maybe it's a man thing or a dad thing, because, I talk a lot about my dad, good man, but a hard man. But he was the same way. Like if I don't know that I did this much, but if I came home, I feel like if I had to come home to my dad with a big screw up.
Right, right.
He would have been fairly calm and helped me solve it. But God forbid you spill your iced tea. At the dinner table, it could be a male thing.
How about you? What are you like, Sue? When it comes to that stuff, are you always the same? Because you seem chill.
I'm generally going to be chill. It would take a lot to do that. But when you were talking about your wife, who's like, "It's all right." What I wonder about is how much, like, you see her have to do that, yet you still get really mad for years and years and years. And even though you know in your head, who cares? It's just, I got to clean it up. That doesn't affect it in the moment.
No, because you don't.
Interesting.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I always think when it comes to stuff like that, and I think Kevin is very much like this, because I have those tendencies too. I think probably a lot of guys do. There are things that when a really big thing happens, you kind of think to yourself, like, "Listen, I don't even know how to get mad at this. Like, I just need to try and get control over this." And I think you know what I mean? Like, when you spill something on the carpet, it's like, well, I secretly know that the more time I spend ranting and raving and getting mad about it, is time I could spend calmly going and getting something and cleaning it up faster. But when a really big thing happens, like a car accident or a major health thing, it's like, I don't even know how to get upset about this. I just need to try and fix this.
I think, and Bill Burr talked about this a little bit too, that because you can't, in my mind, get really upset about the big things. Let's say, for example, Phoebe came home and told Marina and I, "I'm pregnant."
Mm.
That's a really big thing. And I don't want to scar her by going off, "How could you be so irresponsible and stupid?"
Right.
So I would be calm. I would accept it. I would help her out in any way she needed. But you burn the toast, that's where you let it all out. Because you got to let it out somewhere.
Oh, interesting.
That was kind of where I was going. Do you think that one is just compensating for the other?
Yes.
Where when there's a really high stress thing that's real, you have to not let that go.
You have to keep it together.
Because if you do, you can't fix the problem.
That's right.
I can clean up the stupid thing that I spilled while I'm swearing and throwing things, right? I can do that, but I can't fix the big problem if I'm losing my stuff.
100%.
Very interesting. Yeah. And that does make sense. So you're saying this isn't some sort of buried long ago, not dealt with in your youth anger that you are suppressing or letting out at the time. It's more about day-to-day stuff, or if something big were to happen, you will have had it. You can now be calm.
I don't know if it leads to it. I just think it's kind of maybe that balance. But the other part, the more I think about it, is I can do the necessary versus the unnecessary, maybe is the way to put it, right? In the big problems, it's necessary. You don't have control over it. Somebody in the family has a major medical thing. There's a car accident. There's a wildfire. You don't have any control over it, but you do have to handle it, and it's difficult to handle, and if you're losing your mind, you're not going to handle it well. The little thing was so unnecessary and such a stupid thing, and usually it's, again, for me, it's almost always something I do.
Yeah.
Almost always. Sometimes I get mad, like the dog craps in the basement or something.
Right.
And, you know, that's different, but that's a different thing, but it's the same idea. It's not really that big of a deal, and you can still manage that situation when you're being an idiot. And I wonder if it's just the level of necessary or controllable versus unnecessary and very controllable.
Yeah, I have every mental issue you can have. I was just talking to Sue about this in the break before we came on the air. And I am, I don't know what I am, but I have trouble being firm with people, being critical of people in an appropriate way. Mm. And so I think I reserve the meanness for myself.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. Whether it's, I'm so stupid, I can't believe I hit my head on a chandelier, or, you know, or something stupid that I've done, or just, I don't know about you guys, like the Sunday scaries. You know, you wake up on Sunday Sunday night, and I got to go to work tomorrow. I don't get those. I just get the morning scaries.
Okay.
Every morning, if I wake up before 4, isn't that the weirdest thing?
Mm.
If I wake up at 2:30, I go to the bathroom, get a drink, go back to bed, and I go back to sleep. If I wake up any time after 4, that's my time for professional worrying.
Oh, no.
Oh,
and
no.
Hand-wringing and angst. And if there's not something in my day ahead of me that I'm worried about, I'll find something. I'll go through my Rolodex.
Yeah, just make something up.
Yeah.
I feel you.
You do that too?
Or do the same thing.
Well, do you make it up, or do you just more find it? Like, it's coming.
I find it and I blow it up.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And then the weird thing is, and I can't explain this. I would love it if someone could. But if I physically get up and go downstairs and lay on my couch and turn the TV on low, I'm 80-90% soothed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's
mm-hmm.
something about lying in bed.
A different focus.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's something about just lying in bed, spiraling and spinning for people like me that's just torturous.
Yeah. But, you know, I sympathize because my brain works in a similar way where my brain is very hard at letting me be like, everything's fine. Everything's good even. Things are going well. You know, things are good at work and things are good at home and I've, you know, got this thing that I'm looking forward to or whatever. It's my brain does not like to just let me have that. My brain likes to just like find anything possible. Just start making stuff up that's not making up hypotheticals and stuff just to, you know, I don't know why. I don't know why it does it, but
it's almost like
super annoying.
I'm pretty sure that by the end of the show, Wheels is going to punch me in the arm. What I would tend to do is punch myself in the arm.
Oh, I see.
Bunch so that I'm somewhat prepared for it.
Okay.
And then, but what I found in life is that 90% chance he's not going to punch me.
Right.
And so I end up punching myself 10 times and bruising myself
for no
even
reason.
Though you're
and then
not
even
do
if
it.
Even if it is that the doing the other thing didn't make it any better.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, now I'm just more sensitive to
right,
it.
Right. Right.
The quote it's not really a quote. It was like a graph that I've seen before where it's like worry and suffer. And it's like, if you worry once and the thing doesn't happen, well, you've suffered for no reason. Mm. If you worry about it and then it does happen, you've suffered twice for no reason.
That's
and if you don't
point.
Worry about it and then the thing still ends up happening, you only have to suffer the one time.
Yeah.
There you go.
That is exactly how my brain works.
I've come back to that a lot in the last
couple
years. There's no one, I said this to Ranji today, this morning, there's no one I'm more jealous of in my life than you. Seriously. I am friends with Mark Bolger, and my buddy Scott's a multi-millionaire. You're the person I'm most jealous of because of your
just
mental
state. Just because
of that?
Yes. Yeah, and I didn't decide it. I think, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't just tell myself, I'm not going to worry anymore. I just take a thing, and whatever, whatever example you could come up with. This isn't a thing that's happening, but let's say I went to the dermatologist, like, oh, we got to test that. Make sure there's nothing going on there. I'm not going to sit and worry about that until I find out.
Good.
Because I can look at it and go, well, I can't know. And it's not going to change the outcome if I worry. So I move it. But I didn't make myself that way. It's just how it does.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how the brain works.
I have a question. Do you feel better? Okay, let's say you're at home, Kevin, you're about to... I guess you don't really know that you're going to knock over a drink, but when that happens, does your brain say, is it an automatic response, or do you have just a millisecond where you say, I got a choice here, or is it just dive
There's
right
no
in?
No choice. There's no delay. It's right into it.
And that's how it is for me with worrying.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and again, I don't choose to be that way either.
Right.
I'm not trying to rage for no reason.
Right.
Like, that's how we always talk about this. Like, our brains are all wired in different ways. And you can rewire.
Yep. You can.
But it's not easy to do necessarily. And sometimes it can be almost impossible depending on what you're trying to rewire.
I'm totally fine when other people are there, too.
Oh, that's good.
It's a being alone thing.
Silent thought.
It's a lot of being alone thing. Yeah. If there's someone else there, I don't even have to bring it up. I don't have to say, like, hey, I'm worried about this and have them talk me off the ledge. Just their physical presence is enough to usually derail me.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I am trying to be more calm or more of a, when people have something to say to you that maybe you should think about, in other words, not be reactive, whether it's taking it personally or not thinking, you know, just being about it. Just take in information, analyze it, and then calmly respond.
Can I give
but
you,
that's a
Do you see the text
challenge.
We just got from Steve?
What did he say? You're both
Here's
great.
A topic. This is from Steve Moore.
That's our boss.
Here's a topic. My wife mistakenly bought plant-based cheese. Shall I divorce her?
Steve, no.
Well, she's one of St. Louis's top divorce attorneys.
Don't do it. You're going
to
lose.
Hold on to her like grim death, brother.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything.
I love this. A 13-year-old's bucket list has gone viral online. He has about 20, and there are several very reasonable. I want to go to New Zealand. I want to become a millionaire. I want to help make a movie. I want to get married. And then amongst those are, I want to beat someone up and prove the existence of goblins. I love this kid.
You could do the beat one, someone up thing.
Yeah, you can do that today.
But oh, great.
But there's risk. There's risk because you might be the one.
You can beat
meeting.
Up a goblin.
Oh, man. What if goblins were real?
Two for one. I was terrified of goblins because remember the Spider-Man cartoon when we were kids?
Yeah,
yeah.
The Green Goblin.
Oh, the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
I forgot about him.
Yeah, well, that was a dude in a suit. Well, it was a cartoon dude in a suit.
Yeah,
no, he was a real
cartoon.
Goblin.
Was he?
Well, he wasn't in the movie. He was Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, in the comics, I thought. But maybe in the cartoon, he was an actual goblin.
I thought he was. Either that or he just really wore the suit well.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look at the cartoon. Maybe it was the real goblin in the cartoon.
PSA, a study has found that humans feeding peanuts to squirrels makes their jaws weaker and their heads flatter.
Their heads flatter?
Yeah,
what?
We don't need that.
We're messing up squirrels, man. We've turned some of it into carnivores.
That happened to a cousin of mine. It's because peanuts are softer than what they'd normally eat.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's just
slack-jawed squirrels.
Yeah, they won't be able to open up those acorns anymore if you give them too many of those damn peanuts.
Have you seen the fat squirrels?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's normal in, like, you know, in the winterish time.
Mm-hmm. We don't have fat squirrels. Where are the fat squirrels?
I don't know. I've seen them.
Yeah.
Around?
Chubbies.
Just around.
You don't see them now. They should chubby. Be sleeping now, right?
Yeah,
they
now
be
like, I think yeah. they're hibernating.
Yeah.
Doesn't hibernating sound awesome?
It does. Yeah.
Bears will I just can't get over it. Bears will hibernate for like 5 straight months. They just go into a cave and just lay down and fall asleep, and they just stay that way.
Have you seen them come out of their caves? It's pretty cute.
Yeah, it's adorable when they're waking up for the yeah. first time.
What do? They stumble around.
Yeah,
like,
they,
just, sleep
like,
out
they got
the,
like,
oh, that's
squinty
adorable.
Eyes, and they're just like, you know, like pawing really. It's like, what the hell? What the hell? Is that crazy? They just know to do that.
Yes, I told it.
When to go to sleep, when to wake up. The number one restaurant chain in America, favorite, Nothing Bundt Cakes.
Huh?
That's right.
How's that a restaurant?
Number one.
Do they have food other than Bundt Cakes?
Thank you.
Nothing Bundt Cakes, that'd give you a clue.
Well, those Bundt Cakes are good, but that's
but
not a restaurant.
The priest is on the phone. Your father hit the wall. Your mom disowned you. Don't suppose I'll ever know. So me to be a man. A psychiatric exchange. I live around here. Black balloon makes her fly. Almost fell into that hole in your life. You're not thinking about tomorrow. 'Cause you were the same as me. But on your knees.
Welcome back, guys. DG SOKMOX. Happy Friday to you. So Sue Thomas has her own show now, and she was just asking Wheels about a possible guest. Isn't it cool to know people?
Yes.
Like, within this room, we can get you whoever you need to get, right? Yes. If I don't know him, may he knows him. If may he doesn't know him, Wheels knows him. Like, it's cool.
Or you know the person that knows them.
I never thought yeah. I'd be that guy in a million years.
And I think both Wheels and I had a different guy
yeah,
for the same
for
job.
The same
yeah,
job.
Yeah.
That's the same
I appreciate
job.
It, yeah.
No, the kids called
What else you need to know, Sue?
Thanks. I really appreciate
Nick
it.
Nick and Phoebe
Let
called
me help
the,
you out with a restaurant.
The Glover Mafia. Like Phoebe will be like, I need the Glover Mafia. I'm like, eh,
Want,
say yeah. the word. Who you need killed? Good to see you, man.
Thank you. Good to
yeah.
be here.
I love the hat.
Well,
you
yeah,
pull it off.
Yeah, it's my
the backwards Kangle.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah,
the old French beret trick. It's funny. We did a episode of the podcast just now, and it's always a little bit different. And I try to make it fun for my cohort Cheryl. And we did best last year. We did at this time most romantic restaurants mm-hmm. because it's
Ooh,
coming up
that.
On Valentine's
sure
Day.
I
we did
that.
Our favorite romantic places. We go. We got to kind of do that again, but we can't do the same thing. How are we going to do it? And she said, you know, when I wrote for the RFT and we wrote about St. Louis's sexiest restaurants, Ooh. She said it was the most read article of all time. Just that word. And
yeah.
so that's what we did.
Oh, that's
it was,
great.
It was sexy restaurants. So what did I do? I surprised everybody, and I've got candles all over the table. I've got a bottle of wine. I've got my fancy boy French hat on, and we did the podcast by
nice.
Candlelight.
Nice.
That's really
Look
cute.
Look at you.
Oh, anyway.
Can you give us a I'm couple?
Say, did, Jesus? Did you lower the voice a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. I did
get
a little.
Get that raspy.
A little Al Green.
A little raspy thing going.
Did a little Lou Rawls.
Yeah.
Sexiest.
Like, I'm George.
Most of Ben Paremba's, I mean, he pretty much clears the table with sexy restaurants.
Yeah.
His places are always, you know, Bar Moro over there in Clayton.
Yeah.
Really cool. Esca, really cool. We didn't know we were going to do this, but there's two more on Wydown, Acar and Bistro La Florizon, which are all right. And Wright's Tavern, they're all right there. So we called Wydown the sexiest restaurant
yeah.
street in the city.
That's one of my favorite streets in the city.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
It's a great street anyway, and it's mm-hmm. got all the cool restaurants
yeah.
on it. Right, and they're right at the end. So
what's
right
where
before.
Brothers Ferrar, whatever, what's in there
It's
now?
Called Bistro La Floraison, and okay. it's Yeah, it was Barley Frere BLF, and now it's another BLF, Bistro La Horizon.
That's one of the coolest, sexiest places I've been.
It for sure is. And, you know, we set our parameters, and, you know, you'll have to listen to the podcast to hear all about it. But it has to do with candlelight and fireplaces, yeah, and mainly lighting. Yeah. If you turn down the lights, all of a sudden everything gets sexy and everybody looks better.
Every
you ever notice
every
that?
Every restaurant, including Applebee's, should just turn it down.
That's what totally I said. Agree. I said if everybody would turn their lights down halfway, nobody, we'd all be happier. We'd all look better. It would be wonderful.
We would look better, and that's key. You know what drives me nuts is they don't put enough soundproofing in, so anything I say echoes when it's too echoey. So hopefully these places have soundproof, George, right?
Yeah,
so it's,
yeah. No.
You can actually talk.
Right.
Does anyone remember the cattle company?
Barry White.
Or the cattleman's company? Does anyone remember that place over off like Florissant Road? It's where we would go for like ninth grade dances.
Is it sexy?
It was very sexy because it was dark and every table, you couldn't see another table. Every table was like a self-contained booth.
I love that kind of stuff.
It was
and
so
there were
great
restaurants in St. Louis back in the day that were like that. The original Cyrano's. You probably
Sure I do.
The one down the stairs,
yes,
on Des Moines.
Seen a lot of bands there.
Yeah, and places like that. And gosh, there's just so many where, and there's like none of the above is like that now. Mm-hmm. The speakeasy over at City Foundry, it's very, very dark, and it's just something about that sets the tone. And anyway, we got it was silly. We had some fun and drank some wine, and here I am. Hello.
Yeah, you're in a mood. I can tell.
I am. So, but we wanted to talk about Tony's because that was the news of the week, and that was, I guess it didn't take me by surprise because I'd heard and I'd been fielding rumors about this for, you know, close to 6, 8, 10 months. You know, I hear Tony's is closing, and it's like, no. So when it finally happened, I went, yeah, I guess. And I'm kind of surprised, really, maybe the other folks in the city had heard that too, because there wasn't the outcry that I thought there'd be when a 78-year-old iconic, maybe the restaurant that put, we talked about this the other time.
Yeah.
That might have been what put St. Louis on the culinary map, is the existence of Tony's and them winning all those mobile five-star and AAA, you know, five diamond, whatever it was, awards.
I wonder if part of it isn't because they moved.
It could have been. And a lot of people said, I didn't know they moved. I didn't know they were in Clayton. That's part of a problem, too. But I did just talk to the maitre d', and I said, because I'd heard various things about availability. I'd heard, it's just don't even think about it. And I'd heard, well, I got in the other night. So I said, tell me what's going on. He goes, don't even think about it. He said, it's booked, way booked, overbooked. And I thought, well, maybe Anthony's Bar at lunchtime, there's a way to get in there, which was one of my tips a little earlier on in the week. It's like lines out the door, people trying to use their gift cards, trying to get in the door to pay their respects.
It's their personal business, but do we know why?
Yeah. Why it's closing?
Yeah.
You know, I know that where they are at Centene, I know that the lease numbers for that space are very high, and according to James Bomarito, the owner, he said it just, and their attorney said it was a dollars and cents thing. You know, too much going out, not enough coming in. They did not want to lessen the quality of the food or cut back on the service or do anything differently. If it wasn't going to be the Tony's way, we're not going to do it. And so that's it. Just from a financial standpoint, according to them, it didn't add up. So, it's just a shame. I thought that, and I still think, you know, we've got, it closes on the 15th, February 15th officially. And I thought, well, we got a month to go. Maybe there's a white knight that can come along and say, I've got this figured out. Here's how we're going to save. I still think that could happen. That's the eternal optimist in me. But in the meantime, no reservations. It's booked solid. I talked to the maitre. He goes, if I could bring food out on trays and put them on people's cars, I could be selling that too right now. That's how crazy people are for the Tony's experience.
George, I never went.
I never have gone either. Why did they move to begin with to Clayton?
I think business was downtown.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, and they wanted to move a little bit closer to their core clientele, which was in the suburbs.
Sure.
I think corporate business, which was a lot of their business, was not there at the time, especially after the pandemic or with the pandemic.
That's right. They moved in 2021.
Yeah. So it was starting to happen before then. I think I told you guys the story before. Vince Bomarito Sr. said business took a turn south when we weren't a TWA hub anymore, because a lot of the businessmen would come in, have their meeting, have their Tony's experience, and then take the red eye out of town. He said that stopped happening, and all of a sudden corporate business changed. And they had a lot of banquet rooms, a lot of private rooms down there that got used, which they didn't have in Clayton. And I thought, well, maybe they should have had a few of those. But again, I think the space was fixed. It was, you know, whatever, 8,800, and you can't have, you know, 9,000 kind of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of speculation, but I just think it's, I think it's sad personally that the restaurant is going and you know, what
so
is it?
So is that the highest average check restaurant of all time in St. Louis?
Not at all.
No.
And I think that's what's interesting. It's, you know, for if you look at the menu and you look at the menu prices and you go, I pay more than that at Capital Grill.
Wow.
I pay more than that at a lot of places.
So it's about the service?
It's a relative bargain, really. Yes, it's expensive. It's very expensive, but it's not the most expensive. You can, of course, you know, buy a $1,000 bottle of wine and throw it over the top. But that's what I think was a misunderstanding about Tony's is, it's horribly expensive, you know, for the level of service and the place and what you were getting and all these people fawning over you. It wasn't a bad deal at all.
The legends I've heard, and Wheels went there for high school graduation or college graduation. What was it?
Which one?
Tony's. Where was it that you went and you had the waiter standing, filling your ice water, and you're like, I just want to get out of here and go to a party?
I don't think it was me.
Oh.
No, it was you. Big guy, red hair.
It wouldn't have been anywhere here in town because that wouldn't.
Oh, that's weird. Okay.
Oh, you might be somebody. You might be thinking of Bill Burr.
Yeah, that's probably it. So the legends I always heard was that there were like four guys standing at your table, and like every time you take a drink of water, they fill it. Was that hyperbole?
No, that's true, but that was maybe an overstatement. There's a team of three. And that's three guys work every table. But what's interesting about it, especially in the old iteration, is there were these like smoked like glass partitions. And some guy'd come out from behind it and ask you a question. And you go, and all of a sudden he'd disappear. And another guy'd come out from another partition. But there was never any duplication. Nobody ever asked you the same question twice. I go, how the heck do you guys know what each other, what he just said and what he just did? And it was this seamless
dance
choreography that made it so special. It's like, I don't know how the heck you guys are doing this, but yes, your water glass did get filled up a lot. And I remember doing this a couple of times where you just kind of want to check out the room. You just kind of want to look around and scope out. Well, you'd never do that because all of a sudden, what, sir, can I get you something? Do you need anything? What's going on?
What
do we need to do? So, anyway.
Oh my gosh, I really thought it was the most expensive, and that
I
was. And I really thought, well, I can't.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
Yes.
They had some expensive items, but it's just, I think that was part of it. But it was, again, fine dining is changed a little bit. We could talk about how it's changed forever, but that was certainly the hallmark of fine dining.
Right, more with George Mayhee right after this. If you have questions or comments, a story about Tony's, 314-436-7900-DGS. Welcome back, guys. DGS 249. Happy Friday. George Mayhee is here from St. Louis Magazine, talking, of course, restaurants and food and dining. But first, a little update. Sean Malone just tweeted at Watt Wheels.
Yeah, that they have agreed to, well, the city has. So Comptroller Darlene Green signed a couple of emergency contracts today that give the city an additional 9 pickup trucks for 5 days of 8-hour shifts. I guess
9 trucks.
About time, I guess, would be the response.
Yeah.
Like, good, but should have probably happened 7 days ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's enough. 9.
No, maybe not, especially with rain coming
exactly
tonight and tomorrow, and then just it freezing over by Monday.
Yep.
But I will say, though, if you can get out and do, if they're salt trucks, if you can get out and put stuff down during, well, you got to wait till the problem is you can't do it during the rain because the rain washes it away.
Yeah. Right.
So you kind of have to wait till the rain is coming to a close and then get out there and put it down so it doesn't freeze.
This should have been at least a week ago. Sorry.
And now that it's here, start in the morning or start on Sunday morning because whatever you do is going to wash away.
Right, right. So if you now you can clear between now and then because it's warm.
Yeah.
So stuff is movable now where before, not everything, but some of the bigger piles could be movable, like the stuff outside our building or whatever.
I just heard from a buddy of mine that she said that she saw someone with a pickaxe, like a literal 1849er pickaxe.
Yes. Driveway or whatever. Yes.
It took 2 weeks of complaining before they took any kind of action on something that should have already been planned and done.
Right. That's kind of the question, right? We understand, like I think I said earlier, we understand you're not going to be able to cover everything cleanly, smoothly on day one of a larger snow than we're used to. Well, but there should be like...
There's a contingency plan that should
be
in
effect. Right, there should be plans. Like if this happens, this is what we do.
You don't...
Correct.
Being a mayor or a comptroller or a street department director is like being a parent. Parenting is fairly easy until the you-know-what hits the fan. And then you earn your money.
Right.
That's
right.
Your job is to be ready for the unforeseen.
Right.
Yes. And this was foreseen.
Well, yes. I mean, yes, we had days in advance, too, right? We had nothing. Dave Murray telling us, everybody, hey, this is coming. It's going to be here. It's got a chance to be pretty big. You know, I get it. We don't always have this, but you still have to have a chance. You have to have a chance to recover within a few days at worst.
And I feel bad for the restaurants and the businesses.
Oh, my God. How many of them took a kick?
I don't want to say where I was going because it was to buy something for someone on the show, which I still will. But I was heading to Dogtown to one of my favorite places to pick up something for a coworker. And I'm like, hell no, because I just saw some guy on the news skating down Tam Avenue.
Right.
That's real money that I would have paid them that they didn't get.
How many places? I mean, you would know better than anybody, George. I mean, how bad can that stuff hit a restaurant? It's bad enough for a couple of days where it's quiet and nobody's going in because they're snowed in and they're just going to stay home. But if that's lasting 4, 5, 6, 7 days and your street that your restaurant is on is impassable, or even the streets where people live are hard to get out, that's got to kill business.
It's devastating, especially on a weekend when you make all your money.
Yeah.
And as a lot of these guys will point out, you don't get that back necessarily. You know, once it's like we're going there and then... You know, it's just like they don't just automatically show up on Tuesday. It's pretty
much getting an extra visit out of it, right?
No, you don't. So it's very, very expensive for a restaurant.
Mm. How close are most restaurants to the vest as far as the money? I don't mean telling it. I mean like making it.
Really close. I mean, to the point of 0 to a few percentage points. You know, if you're doing 5%, if you're bringing 5% to the bottom line, you're in fat city.
And why
you're doing
is that?
It right. Costs, everything's gone up, and it's been this way for a while. It used to be a really great business, and you could make 15%, and that was pretty good. But cost of goods and cost of labor and cost of insurance and cost of everything, and you can only raise prices so high. And now we've kind of saw with the pandemic, prices were they kind of got a pass to go up, and everybody goes, okay, I'm gonna ride this wave. Yep. I'm gonna raise my prices whether I need to or not, and everybody did. And now we're obviously a couple of years beyond it, but now we're in this insane at the top of this price wave, and I don't think it's coming down. We just have to deal with it and get used to it. And now we're talking about the 30% tips, and it's like, whoa, okay, it's really expensive to go out now.
So what percentage of restaurateurs get what we would call rich?
Oh my gosh, very, very few. And those that do they're good and they're lucky, and it's usually both. You know, it takes both.
And it's typically not the high end. It's like you said, when I talk about opening a restaurant, you're like, do burgers, do pizza, maybe barbecue.
The Jimmy John's guy with 6 stores makes a lot of money. You know, these franchisees with multiple stores can do very well because it's a tried and true thing. It's not risk-free, but it's, you know, if this store doesn't make it, these other five can cover for it kind of thing. So, yeah, I know a lot of franchisees that have made a lot of money. And that's,
and then marketing, right, is it a big deal because it's national marketing?
Right, and they pay into that fund, but they reap a lot from it. And you've got the DoorDash guys who do marketing for you, and you know there's that benefit too. But yeah, you got to have in most cases multiple stores to make some money.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make money with the first one. They say it's the second and the third one. You've got, of course, there's exceptions to the rule, and guys like Paul Manos that doesn't, you know, he doesn't, he just cruises along, and Annie Gunn's, no, I don't want to do another one. Thank you very much. Why should I? So, but most guys need. It's tough, and those that have made money have earned their money. They've been there every day. It's been blood, sweat, and tears the whole time. Trust me, I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've made it, and I've lost it, you know?
Yeah. Did you do better with Harvest or Emos?
You know what? I suppose Harvest, but it was close. You know, Emos is a very, back in those days, a very successful way to make money. I mean, the guys that had one good store were making a lot of money. Those days changed, though, just like everything else. So, yeah, it's been a wild ride, Dave.
Do you see any big sea changes for restaurants in general in the near future?
Just making do with less, and just again to survive, you've really got to be a sharp businessman. You just can't be some guy. I just want to open a restaurant. I've got plenty of money, and you got to negotiate a good hard lease, and you got to have somebody that knows what they're doing that's fighting for you. Otherwise, it's just too easy to make. There's too many mistakes that can get made, and a lot of guys. I think guys, we talked about this before. I think the guys that are getting into it now are a little bit more savvy, a little bit sharper because they're bucking up big time. They're spending $1 million plus to get into this, and they're not going to go into that without some consultants and advisors and people that do know what they're doing.
Would it be tough to pull you back in?
Impossible.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to do it if I could just like put my toe in and get out of it. It isn't that easy. Bill Cardwell retired. I just talked to him not a long time ago.
It was Cardwell's. What I asked you.
Oh, my gosh.
In Clayton.
I think it was.
No, it wasn't on that corner. No, Cardwell's is where Herbie's was.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, Bill Cardwell, you know, quote, retires and goes to work for Marriott. They need him for a couple things. Let's do this and let's do that. And he goes, I've never worked harder in my life. And he goes, this wasn't exactly where it.
Let's put it out to the audience. I'm trying to remember a restaurant I went to when I was a law student, which I believe is where Capital Grill is now and where Joe Buck's was previous. And it was a very famous Clayton restaurant. And I had turtle soup. They're famous for turtle soup. And I can't remember, and Georgie can't remember. So if anyone out there remembers back in the 80s and early 90s what was there, give us a phone call and let us know. 314-436-7900. George, have a great weekend.
Thank
Sue,
you, sir.
Same to you.
Thank you.
And I didn't know I was lost at the time.